Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
April 19, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you can hear me. Anyway, we are live. It is Tuesday, the second broadcast day of the week normally for the O'Chelly Effect. But last night, quite honestly, I just had a missed guest and said to hell with it and spun some tunes. Took requests and all that on my short attention span DJ Theater segment, which aired in my live slot. To hell with it. Why not? Am I in a bad mood? Absolutely. Let's see how that develops as we go forward. What have I picked out? Well, first thing I want to do is take your calls. So if you want to join me, that's fine. 319-527-5016. I almost want to say maybe Jimmy James shouldn't call in because he ends up being the only caller. How about one of you people that listens to this show live who never ever gets a chance to talk and then writes to me about how I wish I'd been able to call in. Call in tonight. You got me in a rare mood, especially if you want to fight. Bring it on, because I'm just in that kind of mood. Couple of things before I get started with what it is I'm going to present this hour. Like I said, we are taking calls. 319-527-5016. That's the number to call. You want to reach out to me on Skype? Send me a message, and I will call you into the show. I've gotten some recent Skype messages and some other messages that make me question certain things, I got to tell you. I recognize that I have presented things in a certain way, and I'm not going to spend time on the war in Ukraine today. I'm refusing to do it because so many people are covering it, and so badly and so ridiculously, that it is painful to examine. The MSM is virtue signaling, and I don't know that all of what they're presenting is even remotely close to factual. Now, I do know that with independent satellite verification, we do know that there are things going on, but them making special circumstances out of the idea that war crimes are being committed, I hate to belabor this point, but I'm going to have to one more time. Any conflict you see, oh, well, we don't target civilians, but yes, you do. Yes, you do. Everybody does. Everybody does. The torture, death, murder, and rape as a weapon of innocent civilians who are not part of a military unit is, guess what? Something that is part of doing business when it comes to the racket that is war. That's it. That's it. Doesn't matter if it's Putin or if it's Biden or if it's Obama or if it's Trump or if it's, what was that, May over there in Britain or any of the other British prime ministers who had to have permission from the Queen to form a government or Canada or anywhere. An organized military force, which is effectively a gang that shows up in uniform, is there to do what? Beat the enemy into submission. How can you do that really easily? Well, if you torture and murder and destroy the infrastructure and stuff like that, it tends to undermine, at least partially, some of those good, clean thinkers who think that they're doing an admirable and honorable thing. War is not admirable. It's not honorable. There are people that go in with honorable intentions, certainly, but it doesn't mean that that's the reality. No. Bottom line is that the war crime is an oxymoron. War in and of itself is a crime. It's a criminal thing. It is the justification of murder, exploitation, degradation, sexual violation, okay, of a population without mercy. It doesn't matter how they write it in the history books. This is the way it's been, whether it's Romans marching for 5 years to get to a battlefield that they don't even know exists previous to that, or it's today where they get dropped off and they're wearing camouflage, even if it doesn't fit with the background that they've been dropped off into. We did this everywhere. Those that are bearing the U.S. flag on their arms did this too. Don't let anybody fool you. Oh, only the U.S. pays attention to Geneva. Anytime you dig deep enough into any conflict that lasted more than, I don't know, 2 weeks, you'll find, guess what? At a certain point, there is absolutely abhorrent mayhem that takes place. It's just part of the equation. So do I want to focus on that like the MSM is trying to do? No, I don't. It's a horror show, and it's a horror show every time, whether it's Yemen, whether it's, oh, by the way, you know, some people think it's okay to kill Palestinians. I don't. But whether it's there or it is a protracted event that happens over time, it's incremental, it is occupation. This is the game. Man's inhumanity to man. And trying to make, you know, Putin be the hero? No. You're not selling it to me, and I don't care how nice some of the Russian people are. You know what? If you think about the atrocities, you think the people of My Lai didn't imagine for a moment that, you know, maybe the Americans that were there, you know, burning villages so that they didn't have to go back to them and, you know, depopulate them one more time. You think they could separate? Or do you think maybe they saw, for a time at least, that everybody who showed up in that GI uniform might have been an enemy? Think that didn't happen in Korea, World War II, etc.? You think some of the German people that got dragged out of their homes, whether they knew about what the Third Reich was doing or not, you think all of them were guilty or none of them were guilty? Guess what? There's no black and white. It's all ugly. War in and of itself is a crime. So I don't want to focus on that. I'm tired of it. Is it horrible? Are there horrible things going to happen? Sure there are, and I'm going to let people speak for themselves when they can from there and tell us what's going on. And if somebody wants to come on here and logically defend to me what Russia's doing without just pitching the propaganda of RT at me, without pitching the propaganda of Russian state media at me, because I'm not allowing people to come on and just pitch the Western media spin either. But if somebody wants to come on here and logically defend this to me and really truthfully tell me about exactly how horrible that little nation was to the world, that they needed to be invaded, destroyed, and their population needed to be treated that way, fine, come on, let's talk. Especially tonight. But bring something, will you? Anyway, I got other stuff to talk about. Like I said, I will be taking your calls. And let's see if anybody's on the line yet. Not yet. Just yet. And it doesn't matter. Don't call in. In the second hour, I will have a Christy Aphrodite with me. And you know that means we might be talking about nature, soul, wait a minute, nature, all, solutions, stuff that comes from nature that just might do you a bigger favor than Big Pharma does. Just might, and she'll be talking about her experiences, and maybe I'll talk about mine starting at 9 p.m. Eastern. But until then, how about we get into some other strangeness that is in the news? And I have to give full credit to J.P. Satilli's News Vandal Rundown, because I sought to collect together a story today. And outside of one story that I got the other day and tweeted about, three out of these four stories I know certainly come from JP's rundown. But then again, maybe they all do, because I get a lot of my news from JP and also from Mike Swanson, because they send out newsletters every day with news in them. But I go to a lot of different strange sources. I go to some stuff that I get to scoff at because it's just filled with nonsense, various blogs. And I was looking at the other day. It's like there is no day in which, even when I'm off the air, I don't go to at least 200 or 300 information sites one way or the other. So I went from everything to, today I went everything from the Assassination Archives to film history, I did some stuff with music history and stuff like that earlier in the day. But I if you were to look at my insane search history, you'd wonder what the hell is wrong with me that I try to read that much crap every day. But I like these stories, and I'm going to put them together and tell you a story today. How's that? And actually, Christy Aphrodite might join me at 7:45, so I better get to this pretty quickly. Anyway, here's something from, scipost.org. And they do a lot of stuff with psychology and all that. And this headline killed me because I had to tweet about it. I felt compelled to tweet about it because the headline definitely jumped out at me. I think it was 2 days ago. And I tweeted. And what I tweeted was, I have an argument with this headline, because if this were so, then I might have had, 22 very, very successful mates or whatever. Or maybe I said wives. I'm not sure. Either way, if this has to do with the selection of mates, I wouldn't have had so many short-lived relationships, I think. You know, because mating is a little different than just, well, mating. But anyway, why am I talking about this? Because here is the headline, and I'll give you guys some of these things in the chat room at, well, no, actually, I won't give it to you in the chat room, but I will give it to you in the show notes at ocelli.com. Why not, right? Maybe I will get it for you for the chat room, too, just so you guys can read along a little bit. Let's see now. Yeah, I'll bring it over. It's sci.org, and why is everybody messaging me privately that I sound depressed? Anyway, I will just pass this along. It's like you're depressed, you're down, da-da-da-da. I might be a little angry today, which might have something to do with that, but I can't explain it, okay? Well, what am I supposed to do with that? Anyway, the headline, without any further ado, whatever ado is, the female orgasm may have evolved as a mate selection tool, according to new research. So, I, you know, if you weren't paying attention before, perhaps you will be now. And as I said, I'll put it in the live chat room at ocelli.com, and we do have that every time we go live, and even when we're not live, you can go in there and screw around and leave messages. Anyhow, here is the article. The female orgasm may be a means of selecting mates for committed long-term relationships, according to a new study published in Evolutionary Psychology. While the male orgasm is necessary for sexual reproduction, the female orgasm is not. Yeah, tell that to a woman. Anyway, back to the article, excuse me. Thus, some scholars have argued that the female orgasm is unlikely to be an adaptation, but rather the evolutionary byproduct of the male orgasm. Others have emphasized the adaptive benefits of the female orgasm. Let me pause from the article here. If you don't know what the adaptive benefits of that are, then you're doing it wrong. Anyway, back to the article. The incredibly incredible variability in orgasm we see among females poses a very interesting evolutionary question. There is still quite a bit of disagreement over whether it has an adaptive function and what that function might be, said Patrick J. Nebel, N-E-B-L, looks like, an assistant professor at the Department of Psychology at Elmhurst University. One of my main interests is exploring evolutionary questions by trying to understand the proximate mechanisms. Proximate mechanisms in this case. How female orgasms might promote relationship satisfaction. Oh, man, Patrick. If, pulling away from the article. Patrick, if you're questioning this, then you really need to get like a real doll or something, because I know you're not doing well otherwise. Anyway, back to it. The mate choice hypothesis of the female orgasm posits that it functions to select males. Pulling away from the article again, folks. If you're selecting males after you had or didn't have an orgasm, you're not selecting males. That is a ludicrous statement in and of itself. Okay. The selection of good long-term mates, okay, could occur through various mechanisms, you think? The Mr. Right hypothesis suggests that a female orgasm serves as a signal of a man's value as a long-term mate. For example, female orgasm frequency has been associated with the partner's family income, self-confidence, and attractiveness. I'm cracking up here. Do these people live on this planet? Back to the article. The long-term pair bonding hypothesis forwards that the female orgasm functions to promote commitment to a relationship by encouraging emotional bonding and attachment. High amounts of oxytocin, a hormone involved in emotional bonding, are released during intercourse and orgasm. Oh, man, this is hilarious. Yeah. Okay, so, again, I'm not reading from the article, but bearing it down here. Get it? Bearing it down. Bearing it down, you know, biting down on something and just going for the ride here on this. it basically says that that might have something to do with whether a woman wants to hang on to you or not, as if you can satisfy her that way, because, you know, hormones are released. Yeah, but I like how they slip in. Well, you know exactly how attractive you are and what your income might be. Might have something to do with it, too. Yeah, yeah, all these things are actually interconnected, but I don't know if that's evolution as opposed to constitution. Anyway, back to it. The context of short versus long-term mating is important to consider, given the, quote, female orgasm, given the, quote, female orgasm may have evolved to help females solve an adaptive problem that is unique to short-term mating, period. One that is unique to long-term mating, oh, that's a comma, or because it helps females solve adaptive problems within both short and long-term mating contexts, write the authors. Why are men authoring this? I'm pulling away from the article. Why are men authoring this? Because nobody actually understands how this works. Maybe you should check in with me next time, guys. Anyway, back to the article. In this work, Neble and colleagues tested three predictions that stem from these two hypotheses in the context of both short and long-term relationships. The study included a total of 175 heterosexual female undergraduate students at Bowling Green State University with an average of age of 19. Participants were randomly assigned to one of six conditions: manipulating relationship context, and then in parentheses, short versus long term, and orgasm frequency, and then in parentheses, never versus occasionally versus almost always. Participants read a hypothetical scenario describing their relationship with a man named Michael. See, here, let me just stop one more time from the article, because if you're trying to look at a hypothetical orgasmic situation and then answering a questionnaire, I call BS. You're not answering the questionnaire properly, because you can't okay. Let me just go back to it so I can get through this. Okay, the short-term condition outlined a one-month relationship, while the long-term condition referred to a one-year relationship. Following some general details about the relationships, in parentheses, such as where they met, okay, end parentheses, participants then read about the sexual nature of their relationship. E.g., in your relationship, this is in quotes, with Michael, you, brackets, never, occasionally, almost always, experience an orgasm. Next, participants answered questions relating to relationship satisfaction and commitment and perceived likelihood of staying in the relationship or ending it. These items were used to create a secondary dependent variable assessing expected relationship duration. Okay. Bull. This is just bull. This is horrible. You're going to hypothetically imagine that you have a relationship where you're either satisfied or not satisfied in bed. Let me tell you, they react differently all the time. I can tell you all about the complete jerk scenario where, yeah, that's what they're good for. And then woman sticks by, complete jerk, because makes her legs shake. What can I say? And then there's other cases where you can do that, and, you know, you just ain't got the cash to hang on to her. So, how much BS do you have to roll into a hypothetical relationship in a... Okay, so anyway, I'm back to contending with the headline. I'll let you guys read the rest of the article. I'll include it in the show notes, because the hell with this, these researchers are not doing real research. They're using a control group in hypotheticals. People answer hypothetical questions one way. They live a completely other way, I assure you. Anyway, let's go to another aspect, and this is way more creepy, of, let's see, human relationships, let's call it. And I don't know. I'm trying to have fun with this, guys, because I have to. I really got to think about this and instead of the ridiculousness that is around most of the planet at the moment. Anyway, I'm going to give you guys another article, which I'll throw into the chat room as fast as I can. And let's see, copy link, yeah. And I will give it to you now. I'm going to read from an article which posited a very, again, provocative a provocative headline. But let's see where this one goes, because the last thing was BS. I got to tell you, it really doesn't. It helps to, you know, get a little bit of a repeat performance in a relationship, but that's not a relationship. That's just, you know, your bang buddy or somebody that hangs around for a while until they find a better offer, regardless of climax or not. And I'm trying to keep this clean, believe it or not. Anyways, this is an interesting article, and it comes from, let's see, osu.edu. Okay, so here we go again with the academics. Let's see if they can understand something else, because this is completely creepy and nerdy. And I've given you the link in the Ocelli chat room. When AI companions for lonely people seem a bit too human. So, anyway, Jeff Grabmeier, Ohio State News, okay, wrote this. And what can I say? Like I said, osu.edu, and the link will be with the show notes. Imagine a future in which, this is the article, imagine a future in which lonely people can interact with social bots. Is the future supposed to be 5 minutes from now? Because that's how fast it takes you before you can do that. They're all over everything, including the anti-social media crap. I got to read the rest of the article. Hold on. With social bots, based on artificial intelligence, AI, to get the conversation and connection they crave. While it sounds intriguing, a small preliminary study suggests people may not be comfortable with AI companions that look and talk too much like real humans. Well, if they look at all right, I'm sorry. I gotta get through more of this. We think it may seem a little too creepy to have these embodied robots that act and look almost human, said Kelly Merrill Jr. Okay, Kelly Merrill Jr. I'm gonna assume that that's a guy. Okay, named Kelly, because usually women don't get named Jr. But then again, I don't know. We're in a new age. Maybe it is a woman. Let's continue. Because if it's semi-rational, it's probably a woman. And if not, it's probably a dude, if it's totally disconnected and hypothetical. Sorry, back to the article again, because Kelly there is the lead author of the study and a doctoral student in communication at The Ohio State University. Ugh. People seem to be more comfortable with AI companions that were voice-based, more like smartphones and smart speakers like Alexa or Siri. Merrill conducted the study with Jiyoon Kim of the University of Central Florida and Chad Collins of St. John's River State College. All right. Their results were published recently in the journal Communication Research Reports. The researchers were interested in learning more about the role that the social presence and warmth of AI companions have on people's views of them. The study involved 106 college students who participated online. The students were only told the study was aimed at understanding their perceptions about technology. They watched a 5-minute clip that the researchers edited from an episode of the television show Black Mirror. While the focus of the actual episode, Be Right Back, was somewhat different, the edited clip was designed to show a lonely woman named Martha taking on an AI companion named Ash. Wow. Let me break from this article real quick. You know, when I covered this on the show, people complained, why are you watching Netflix and telling us about it? But they can take it seriously and create a whole study about it there at college, which, by the way, if your only sample of test subjects are college students, I got to call foul one more time. College students? All right. Let's just go back to the article quickly. Some participants watched a clip in which Martha interacted with Ash only by voice. Others watched a clip in which Ash was represented as a realistic-looking robot that talked and interacted with Martha. Pause for article again. Because here's the problem. If they already saw the Black Mirror episode and nobody bothered to vet them out who already saw it, their perceptions are worthless here. And even so, you're relying on a lot of things here. Oh, this is crap. Again, the crap. What are people paying these colleges for again? Communication study, right. Okay, sorry. Participants rated Ash on social presence, which is how much he seemed like he was really with them. Ash was also rated on warmth, which was defined as the feeling of friendliness and intimacy. One hypothesis could be that people would like an AI companion that scored high on social presence and that acted more like a human. Wood, Merrill said. See, I gotta stop again. This is nuts. This is totally invalid. All right, if somebody doesn't like what I'm doing here, by all means, call in. 319-527-5016. But this is absolute ridiculous. Here, watch this TV show on your tablet or on the screen over here and tell me how warm it makes you feel. Well, if it does, that might have something to do with the success of the cinematography and direction and lighting as opposed to a real social interaction. If you wanted to create this scenario, you create a virtual bot or a bot like Ash, and even if you had a puppet master and somebody voicing Ash that way and somebody else doing it through a screen so that you had like a set of allegedly virtual people that could interact, even if you don't have the proper AI, or if you do, you could enhance it, right? And you could try this on different levels, and that would be a lot cleaner of a study than, here, watch this Black Mirror episode we edited. Maybe I'm a nut. Okay, let's move on. Okay, but those who viewed Ash as an actual human-looking robot were not more likely to recommend Ash if they thought he had more social presence. The study didn't ask participants why, but the researchers believe it had to do with what scientists call the uncanny valley. See, this is another piece of idiocy because there's a whole bunch of emotional context built into that presentation where this woman lost her boyfriend, right? In the show, if I remember correctly, and somebody that you've lost, you know, like if you had an AI buddy, okay, that you just found, or, you know, you came across, and you probably do, actually, if you use any of this anti-social media, there's probably a bunch of AI bots that you think are friends that interact with you, whether you know it or not. And I featured the whole thing about the service that does a text thing from, you know, your dead loved one's social media stuff and tries to emulate them. This is the thing. They liked it. They didn't. They don't know nothing about this. They're looking at it on a screen. The emotional context that they probably edited out of this also is that this is somebody she missed. Now, that is a different dynamic than how easily it is you can accept somebody who is also being creepily presented as a resurrected loved one. That's a different story, man. I don't care how you edit it. Some of that context is going to remain. Otherwise, you're going to quash the experience anyway and make it even more unnatural and weird than the actual experience is. Okay. In the clips, the actor playing the robot version of Ash did a good job of seeming slightly mechanistic and not quite human. It creeps people out. And that may be why more social presence in the embodied Ash didn't make people more likely to recommend the bot for lonely people. See, all right, I'm done with this now. Ohio State News, you know what? Kiss my ass. Your study sucks. And you people are working on a false presence. A premise. Okay? So what are you going to do? So, all right. Connected story. Okay, and now I'm going to go get another connected story, and you guys are going to go, how the hell is he connecting this? But don't worry, I'll get you there. And I'm done with this story, but again, it'll be in the show notes, and I will make sure that we get it over into the chat room, especially this new story I'm about to read from. And it is relevant. It's going to sound like it's not, but again, bear with me a moment, because I'm going to show you how it works. And this will have to do with our friend, Mr. Elon Musk. Why? Okay, so I went over to the Business Insider, businessinsider.com, and they have an article which says, now why is this relevant? Just bear with me. The amount of data Elon Musk would have access to if he privatized Twitter cannot be compared to anything that has ever existed, a report says. Now, why is this relevant? Because a part of what they're going to do with AI presences that are meant to emulate people are use databases and data pools like that which are formed from social media platforms like, ding, 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 Twitter. Anyway, Elon Musk's plan to privatize Twitter have a spurred concern among privacy experts and social media researchers, including one former Harvard professor who told the Washington Post that having one person in control of the social platform, in quotes, is a disaster, end quotes, for user privacy. The former professor and author of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, Shoshana Zuboff, said huge ad revenue and unregulated data collection about user behavior have changed the social media industry, which now holds incredible sway over real-world events. Because content on social media platforms can influence public opinion and lead to changed behavior, she says, the people in control of the sites hold a tremendous amount of power. Putting that power in the hands of a single person, she said, would be, quote, incompatible with democracy. All right, let me pause from the article. Shoshana, a social media platform is not a democracy. It's already incompatible with democracy. Elon Musk is incompatible with democracy. All of these incongruent things do not fit into your jigsaw puzzle. 3D or not, Shoshana. Sorry, back to the article. Quote, there are simply no checks and balances from any internal or external force, Zuboff told the Washington Post. Should Musk take ownership of Twitter, the Tesla CEO would have near complete control over an amount of user data, quote, that cannot be compared to anything that has ever existed, and allows intervention into the integrity of individual behavior and also the integrity of collective behavior, end quote, Zuboff said. Quote, this is a disaster. It's not only about Elon Musk, but he kind of puts it on steroids, end quote, Zuboff told the Post. All right. Well, anyway, as I said, there it is. Related story. And now they're going to worry as to exactly who, if somebody else controls the monstrosity that is the anti-social media platform, well, maybe there'll be trouble. Too late. Ship has sailed. All right. So one more, maybe two, actually, two more stories before I get out of here and get on to Christy Aphrodite in the next hour. Here it is, and this one, let's see, is from thenextweb.com. Okay, and I'll just get straight into it without a lot of commentary and just see, again, if you can figure out what story I'm trying to tell ya about a lot of things here in one shot. How the metaverse and quantum physics could prove our universe is a fake. Okay, if we can simulate reality, there's a greater than 0% chance our reality is simulated. What? There's a greater than zero. There's a greater than 0% chance. Qualified intellectualism here. On this particular platform, huh? Greater than zero chance. There's a greater than zero chance that nuclear bombs will drop in the next 5 seconds. It doesn't mean that it's got any validity. I mean, except when if you're in certain parts of the world, there's bombs dropping on many places on the map that nobody wants to talk about. Anyway, the article. Our universe is a ridiculous place. It's where all of the silliest things we're aware of happen. And chief among the silliness is the wacky idea of time. Don't get me wrong, the metaverse is a strong second, especially of Facebook's meta agonizingly dysfunctional approach to building it. But there's even stranger than changing the name of the world's most... But wait, but time's even stranger, excuse me, than changing the name of the world's most widely known technology company to something that literally means self-referential. Time is the opposite of self-referential. If it exists in a tangible physical form, then we might be living in a simulated universe. Our own bespoke lawyer in the metaverse. This might sound weird, but it's actually pretty intuitive. In this scenario, for whatever reason, someone or something creating a simulated reality and put us in it. This reality is made of discrete chunks of space-time. From our point of view, this space-time is the bedrock of our universe from the creators. It's the bit that makes up our data. This all begs the question, what if time doesn't exist? What if time is just a measurement and we're living in a base reality? If that were true, we'd have to figure out what reality is actually made of. Oh, do you people need shrooms? Anyway, and that's where physics concepts such as string theory, parallel universes, and dark matter come in. They're all theoretical ways of explaining away the need to describe the universe in the kinds of terms we can intuit and recreate. It's a much more interesting article, however, if we take a leap and assume that time does exist. What is time? We've covered the concept of time-space as discrete chunks of extensively here at Neutral. Yeah, Neutral, all right. And that's what it is. It's the Neutral Web. Oh, boy. The Next Web. Anyway, I leave this thing to your you should go through it. It's an interesting discussion for a moment, but quite frankly, again, are we living in a simulation? If the simulation is solid enough, you're not going to be able to figure it out. And even if you could, it might be a deceptive branch reality and multiverse and string theory and all that. I don't got time for that today, but you want to play with it? We can. Let me know. So we'll move on to my last little... This is the comedy sandwich I'm going to do today because these things all do link together and you're going to wonder how or why I put them together, but I think it's fairly sensible. Okay, the proliferation of certain nonsense and technology have combined to show us that, I don't know, you know, in the old days I might have said these are signs of the apocalypse, even though I wasn't a Christian. And here is definitely one of them, and I'm not sure which horsemen we're talking about, but gotta be one. And we need to give it a sugar cube at this point, because the New York Post printed the story. Now, you remember some years ago there was that young lady who was on a television show saying, "Catch me outside, Dan, how about that?" Yeah, so anyway, "Catch me outside, girl." Bahad Bhabi. Okay, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's Bhad Bhabie, pays all cash for $6.1 million Florida mansion. Okay. Danielle Bregoli. Okay. Danielle Bregoli, now known as Bahad Bhabi. Yikes. Who launched to internet stardom 5 years ago when trying to fight Dr. Phil McGraw on his namesake talk show about uttering her famous words, "Catch me outside, how about that?" Well, it was "Catch me outside, how about that?" Anyway, sorry, my impression. Now has something else to add to her name, property. The Florida native, whose television interview has since racked up some 14 million YouTube views and has some 16 million Instagram followers, shelled out $6.1 million for a Boca Raton, Florida home in an all-cash deal. That's right, you can now cash her inside an ultra-luxurious 9,200-square-foot home. Bregoli, now 19, closed on a 7-bedroom, 7-bathroom spread, which comes packed with all the amenities on March 3rd, record show. A modern 2020 completely redone estate, the property located in a gated Palm Beach County community on an acre of land, features a 2-story guest house, hurricane impact windows, and porcelain tiles throughout. Oof. And let's see, then there's pictures here. Lots of them. The eat-in kitchens come with a walk-in pantry and eat-in chef's kitchen, excuse me, comes with a walk-in pantry and a top-of-the-line appliances. Meanwhile, the primary bedroom located on the first floor boasts 3 large walk-in closets and an outside jacuzzi area. The primary ensuite bathroom features a walk-in rain shower with 2 shower heads and a waterfall middle shower head. The previous listing notes amenities in the smart home include a billiard / club room, a dry sauna, and a wine storage space. Whew. Anyway, and then there's again some more pictures, nice pool, jacuzzi area, all that stuff. This marks the second home that the internet star has purchased. She also owns a 5-bedroom, 7-bathroom estate in the same neighborhood, which is on the market for $3.67 million. Bregoli has landed several multi-million dollar deals thanks to her manager, Adam Kluger. Kluger set her up with Atlantic Records, although they have since parted ways. She has earned millions in brand deals with online retailers like Fashion Nova and Copycat Beauty. She also launched her own indie music label, Worldwide. Her music has been streamed more than 1.5 billion times. But perhaps her most controversial source of income in her account is on OnlyFans, which she joined when she turned 18. The paid subscription platform, which has gained notoriety in the adult entertainment industry, earned her $1 million in her first 6 hours on the site, shattering the OnlyFans record. While she has not admitted to how much her scantily clad photos and videos on the platform have earned her since, she did say it's enough to make her set for life. But the star has had her fair share of troubles and in June 2020 completed a 30-day rehab program for prescription pill abuse and childhood trauma. Yeah, the Catch Me Outside chick has enough money that she's set for life buying, you know, $10 million worth of house in Florida that we know of. And she's 19. I tell you something, there is an advantage to getting yourself 15 minutes of fame and, you know, and having the correct organs, isn't there? So that's the way that works. Can you see the connection on all this? Can you hear me? You hear me now? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Look, I'm going to leave the phone lines open. It does appear. Oh, I did get a call, and you know what? I'm going to hold you over because I'm thinking that Christy Aphrodite is going to come on early. So we'll get to, let's see. Yep. Okay. Yeah, we're going to get Christy Aphrodite on early, and I'll just take your call. So I do see that we got Jimmy James hanging on the line, and I'll bring you in for Christy, Jimmy. And anybody else who wants to join me, 319-527-5016, you can do that. And then the next hour, you don't got to listen to me rant and rave and tell you all about the female orgasm, the Cash Me Outside chick AI, and artificial companions as seen on Black Mirror. No, we're going to move straight on to guess what? The real world. And I don't mean the TV show. I mean the real natural world and what that may or may not present to you, as in soul, S-O-U-L, lutions or ablutions, and as you what you might be able to find through nature et al, natural solutions. I don't know. Maybe not. Guess you'll have to judge for yourself and learn. And that's what we're going to do in the next hour. Hopefully that sounds good to you. 319-527-5016. And again, Christy Aphrodite will be joining me shortly. Stick around. The Tuesday Ocelli Effect will...
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination looked into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I didn't, you know, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Ocelli.com.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.
Chili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, but of course you could be hearing us some other time, some other place, through the podcast, etc. Welcome, no matter where you are, when you are, who you are. It is Tuesday, and thankfully we get a little bit of an early start with Christy Aphrodite. Of course, go to MyTrueEssence.net and get reference to just about everything that I'm sure is going to be discussed right here tonight. And also go to ChristyAphrodite.com. And you can listen to the Ocelli.com network over there if you like, because she does have a listen live and chat page over there. But either way, every Tuesday, this is what we're doing with the second hour, and extremely productive. And we are transitioning and creating, what do they call that? Oh, yeah, a segue from the unnatural world and the ridiculous to, well, much more natural things. So how are we doing tonight, Christy?
Happy Tears Day. But wait a minute, what does Tears Day mean?
Ah, well, unfortunately, TYR is how I'm saying Tears Day, but TYR would be the god of death. And that's what Tuesday is named after. You know.
Okay, I thought you were, I imagined tears, and I was wondering if it was like a, I don't know, a bad day. I had a couple tears days.
Oh, yes.
This week, actually.
You know, it's funny because other people have noted that I sound a little down. And I don't know how they're getting that. I might sound a little angry, and I was trying to laugh in the first hour a bit. Because, you know, first of all, that whole weird article on the female orgasm, to start it out, and then I went into AI and the discussion of, you know, how people have interpersonal relationships and this weird study out of Ohio State University. And then I finished it with the, you remember the Catch Me Outside? Remember that girl?
I never heard of that until just like 20 minutes ago, Chuck.
Oh,
I'm not really plugged into mainstream society, so I never knew those people existed at all.
Oh, she went super viral after being on Dr. Phil. Like, you know, one of those...
Why? What did she do?
Well, she was like one of those out-of-control teens on Dr. Phil, right? And and what happened is she goes on there and like basically says, you know, all you bitches are just jealous of me. And then they were yelling at her, and she's
so
going,
that's all it takes to be rich and famous.
Well, no, but here's the thing that got her rich and famous is she goes, "Catch me outside, then. How about that?" And she was like, "This, you know, this girl did not look like she should be talking like that." And she, "Catch me outside, then. How about that?" Which basically means, you know, I mean, let's translate it to English. I'll meet you outside, and you know, we'll fight outside, right? And somebody took that clip, and it went viral. "Catch me outside, then. How about that?" Well, she was a teenager, and when she turned 18, she went on to, you know, she actually made deals and stuff, endorsement deals and all kinds of things. But then she went on OnlyFans, which a lot of women have gone on, especially, and made a fortune with, you know, like, privately, I'll sell you, you know, naked pictures, or there was that one girl who... remember the NAACP worker who said I racially identify as black even though she was white?
Right.
So she went on
remember.
There. Well, she went on there and she was selling pictures of her feet. That girl.
God, that's so. You're telling me I'm doing it all wrong.
Well, what I'm telling you is
backbreaking labor 7 days a week. From morning till dark, and all I have to do is like show my feet or say something really stupid somewhere.
Well, and you can. Well, the other thing is, I think she was, you know, they say she was scantily clad, but I do know that at one time that website was like, "Here, I'll show you my breasts, but you guys got to throw me enough money, and then I'll show you my breasts, or I'll show you another part of me, or whatever." And then they would put in requests and. It would up the amount. It was like Patreon, but just for I'll show you what I got on video or stills. And women who you never even heard of were making, you know, large amounts of money doing that. And
sometimes I wish I was okay with displaying my body like that, you know, but then I'm like, yeah, nah.
Well, see, that's the other weird thing too, is that, you know, there's all kinds of fetishistic stuff on there that I've heard about. I mean, I'm not on OnlyFans, but it is now legend that like every, like you could go on there, like if you were a burn victim and do that, and people would pay to see that also. I mean, it's just really bizarre. OnlyFans, which initially was supposed to be there for, like, if you were a celebrity of some kind, you could interact with your fans directly and they would pay for the privilege, you know, for like a monthly subscription. But it turned into, well, I don't need to be famous. I think some girls in the porno industry who were semi-famous went on there and were like, well, sure, I'll pose with a jar of mayonnaise crammed into an orifice. And, like, they, and guys would pay collectively, like, you know, thousands of dollars to get a video of that or still picture or both that they could download and keep. And
all I have to say, Chuck, is we're from the 70s, so until you're putting a shark all up in that shit in a hotel with Led Zeppelin, you ain't shit.
Listen, you and I are aware of the bizarre things that really should.
I mean, mayonnaise, come on, be original, man.
I'm just saying. But I'm talking about whole jar, not opening it either. Anyway.
God.
Yeah.
Don't even want to imagine this.
Okay, look, I'm just.
Wow.
There are flexibilities that women have that men do not have. I'm just saying.
Well, mate, should we tell him now or later that I grow organic dildos?
It links to the story. Why not? You know.
All right.
So this
Those
one's
yeah. nature for your fresh cucumbers, loofah, zucchini of every size. I got a Iranian squash. I'm just kidding. Wow. Yeah. No. I don't think. Yeah. Whatever. I guess people can do whatever they want.
Hey, listen, what did they used to say? Animal, vegetable, or mineral, right? I mean, just... what we used to call that? Trisexuals, right? Because it used to be you were either straight, or you were gay, or you were bisexual, and then you had this other category, and we used to call them trisexuals, because they'll try anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And I was fine with that, though. I don't understand why... People have to be recognized for, you know what I mean? We used to just be called like open-minded or experimental.
Well,
or,
but you see, here's the other side of that argument, though. Is
why do we want a label?
Well, see, I also don't care that, look, if you're going to do this stuff at home and amuse yourself anyway, if you tape it and sell it, I mean, it's not my business. If somebody wants
to
buy it.
Yeah, do whatever you want, for sure.
You know,
yeah, but like, why do I have to... You know, start my day to recognize. You know, like, can't we just be humans again? And
I was just humans
who do different things sometimes.
But I was just pointing out that the Cash Me Outside girl, you know, at the age of 19, has just, you know, completed buying $10 million worth of two houses in Florida.
That's insane. I hope she's super happy.
Well, she broke a record. See, that OnlyFans thing. She broke a record on there because she made over $1 million in 6 hours. When she went
what?
On there. Yes.
With pictures or just by saying, cash me outside, how about that?
No. with the, you know, pictures. You know, it's like, you want to see the cash me outside chick? Here I am. 6 hours later, $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, goes to show you the value. Yeah. Goes to show you the value of the 18-year-old with the 15 minutes of fame that can finally be naked on the internet legally. So, all right. Anyway, enough of all that. Let's get back.
Unbelievable. That's amazing, though, that people can,
well, see,
you
to
know,
me,
find a living with crazy things. Like I said, I got it wrong.
Listen, so did I, because from what I understand, if you are a guy, I mean, you don't make as much money, but I wouldn't have to work hard at all at anything if I did certain things online.
Right.
You know, or I was to get into the business of managing some of these ladies, I would be just fine. It would not be a problem. I mean, if I could make a deal where I can make, let's just say I manage you, Christy, and you were making $10 million. If I took 15% of that, I don't think you'd care, and I'd be happy. So,
dude, if you come up with a one-liner for me to go say on OnlyFans or TikTok or whatever... That makes $1 million. You easily get half, man.
Well, you'd have to show your breasts afterwards, probably. That you know, after you do that, you get the fame and you got the traffic. Then you got to go. By the way, here's my chest. Boom. You know, it's
because all the 19-year-old little boys want to see 50-year-old eggplant hanging where breasts used to be.
There is a whole. Wait a minute. Now I know for a fact there's a whole industry devoted to that.
All right, you come up with a line, we split it 50-50.
They call it, now no offense to you, Christy, but they call it granny porn. Okay.
All right, well, that's cool. I qualify, kind of. I mean...
Well, it's a kind of industry, if you can get a piece of it, I mean, it makes something like $60 million a year in the U.S. alone. So, just saying...
Okay, you come up with a line, man, I'll read that script, and... I'll show my tits for the greater good. I mean, nobody's seen them anyways.
Hey, there you go.
So I might as well at least show one lucky bastard.
If they're going to pay you hundreds of dollars for, you know. Anyways, back to the subject at hand. No, but this is the fun of it. I wanted to go through the artificial reality and exactly how out of control that is and what that, you know, what that shows us, and also work in the idea of AI and how that's going to be very abusive and very unreal to the seemingly manufactured reality that a lot of people find themselves in, is a huge contrast to what you and I are about to discuss. And we've already got Jimmy James waiting on the line, but if you want to join us, you can call in now live, 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. And if you're on my Skype list or you want to friend me on Skype, send me a text message. I will bring you into the show if you ask. If you want to talk to Christy, especially if you want to ask her, because I'm going to shut up now. I've already rattled on too long, but I had to give you a laugh because I had to make myself laugh with my first hour, and I'm pleased to have you. So, Christy Aphrodite, should we begin with Jimmy James? Should we go on to a subject? What should we do?
I just want to say one thing, and then we'll see what Jimmy has for us, but I know that if we are going to continue or start the depression anxiety topic, I know it seems like the two subjects, last hour and this hour, are diametrically opposed. However, in my own personal experience, and I did my first video about this 10 years ago, 2012, called The Hells We Go Through in the Name of Beauty. And I shared my own personal experience. And to contrast that with how I am now, where I don't care and I'm not trying to please people. You know what I'm saying? So it actually causes depression and anxiety, chasing that approval, the recognition, having to have the perfect body, the perfect hair, the perfect makeup, people following you around all the time. It is not fun, and you always hate yourself. And even at 6 feet tall and 102 pounds, I would be perfect if I just had a nose job and liposuction. You know, like I was skeletal skinny because I grew up in that, you know, Hollywood-ish, you know, School for Creative and Performing Arts, being a 6 foot blonde on the southern border, that was pretty much all I was good for. So I'm glad that that's what you felt like talking about in the first hour, because I have personal experience with depression and anxiety that go hand in hand with that. And I'm on the other side. So,
well, unreal expectations are certainly going to carry through in the unreal world, right? So the metaverse and all this, the virtual realities, the interaction of the anti-social media platforms, all of this plays into it now, which is different from when you and I were growing up, where there was a societal expectation, let's say, you know, about appearance and about what it meant and all that. See, that's why I started out with the whole thing about the female orgasm as a mechanism to, you know, to choosing a mate, which is this one weird study I find funny. And really, it's ridiculous the way that they did it. It's like, oh, we gave these women a hypothetical questionnaire. And I'm like, yeah, you can't do that with a hypothetical questionnaire, first thing. Second thing is, do these college students, which is who their pool was, have a remote understanding of the interactivity of life? I mean, because this is a weird kind of new scene where people are stuck to their phones and they're stuck to, you know, some of them. And by the way, there's a lot of women out there that are not exposing their bodies, but are just giving beauty tips that are also making fortunes on the internet. You know, and again, it's like this weird feedback loop of the unreal, which has nothing to do with health. You know, some people would say that, you know, grooming and having your appearance a certain way and this and that is about mental health. And I guess to some degree it can be, but I don't necessarily say that I understand all this. I'm just presenting it as this is something to consider, is that the people that tell you, you know, these psychological facts and things like this are quite often wrong, because they're working on false premises. And we live in a society now of false premises. Yes. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, think about this. Would you rather, you know, the old, remember that character that Billy Crystal created, out of a celebrity, where he said, you know, do you want to look good or do you want to feel good? Right?
Dude, I never knew that because I don't pay attention to that. But I even did a video looking good versus feeling good and said those exact words. Wow.
Yeah, but his whole thing was, you know, it's better to look good than to feel good, because he was right. This super pretentious, you know, hyper superficial individual, as Hollywood would present and produce and put out there as an example. And it was meant to be a mockery of that. But at the same time, this is the society we've gotten to. Where
that's exactly, and I beg to differ with Mr. Crystal and anyone who has lived both sides of that. But if they were so happy trying to keep up with appearances, why are they on pills and alcohol and, you know, things like that?
Well, even Cash Me Outside Girl had a stint in the rehab with the prescription pills, by the way, recently. So, you know, I'm just saying.
She's trying to keep up with appearances. Right. And that's not a way to a happy life, unfortunately. And you know, I hesitate even saying that, because I would love to see it. And I hope it does exist. And if not, someday, that people can be themselves and be just as successful.
Right.
And, you know, okay, yeah, you're hot. That's awesome. Be hot, but you don't have to always be that picture perfect. Like, you know, can you show yourself when you get up in the morning, or like, do you have to? Like, I would be afraid to leave the house if I didn't spend like 2 hours on my hair and makeup and every hair wasn't in place. It would literally ruin my entire day. It was ridiculous, but I was so lost in that self-hating spiral that is clearly promoted all throughout society, you know, men too, but especially as a woman, like everything about us is wrong, right? Body hair, periods, you know, fine lines, wrinkles, we have to look like a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model and be Martha Stewart, or, you know, at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, there's so many expectations where we've been convinced that we need all these products that only our saviors, you know, corporations, governments can provide for us, products to that halt our natural body flow. And I want to bring up bras here, because bras cause cancer. Fact. And I'll just briefly, to put it simply, your lymphatic system, that's what our breasts are full of, right? Mm-hmm. And your lymphatic system is essentially like the sewer system of your house. It has to flow. But when you're squeezing it and leaving red marks on your skin and holding it up high, it's not flowing there, okay? And it not just on a physical level, this actually also goes along with the topic, and I, you know, been there, done that, both sides. It when it blocks the flow of your lymphatic fluid, it's not just your lymphatic fluid that it's blocking, right? Anything that causes constriction, as within, so without. So if you're wearing tight socks, tight belts, tight hats, corsets, you know, nylons, tight high heels, bras, things like that, constricting clothing all the time, mm-hmm. it messes with our energy, again, leading to depression and all sorts of other diseases, which Sidney Ross Singer coined the term culturogenic disease. And that's how the things that we're taught are normal, deodorant, again, bras, high heels, tight socks, even for shoes, for that matter, you know.
Well, deodorants, by the way,
normal,
yeah,
are actually the cause of disease.
Well, deodorants, by the way, for both men and women, cause problems because it blocks the natural process, and you end up with backups that cause all sorts of things.
Right, antiperspirants are the worst.
Yeah.
Because that's like trying to block your sweat, too, and putting those chemicals there. So you're holding all your poison fluid there that's supposed to be flowing through your body, and then putting those chemicals right there. That's the epidemic of breast cancer.
Right, right. So with that, though, I do want to transition to get to Jimmy James because he's been on hold a little bit.
Yeah, sorry, we got off
on. No, it's okay.
Sorry.
This is all great information, but let's get on to the what Jimmy James wants to talk about, and then we'll probably get back to depression and constriction because, boy, that's probably going to take us a couple of weeks, actually, to go through, in my mind anyway. Let's see how it goes. But let's get Jimmy James on the line. And see what he wants to ask. How you doing tonight, man?
Doing good.
Doing good.
Hey, Jimmy.
I originally called in the last show. I was going to ask you with the Catch Me Outside girl. I was going to ask how in the world she could have made money, but you already answered that right afterwards.
Yeah, I did. So that's how she made. But she made money. She had a record deal. She had all kinds of stuff off of that. And somebody said in the chat room, I think Casey was making jokes, which also, you look marvelous. Yeah, that character, Fernando or whatever, was the character I was talking about, number one. Number two, he was making jokes about some of that as well. But she had endorsement deals. I don't know if Dr. Phil got a cut. I think Casey said that in the chat room. But, yeah, there's a lot of ways to make money with your 15 minutes of fame if you can get it, I guess. And what can
remember
I say?
Remember the good old days where you had to have talent to get a record deal?
Well, yeah, talent, but then again, you know, sometimes you didn't. You just had to be notable somehow. I mean, they let William Shatner sing, for God's sake. you know, and Dee Dee Ramone did a rap album, let's not forget.
And
so,
the Monkees. They let them sing.
There was the Monkees. They eventually learned to play their instruments, but one of them, what their mother created, Whiteout or something. Anyway, Jimmy James, I don't want to go off on a tangent because I wanted to let you talk to Christy because I know that you had followed up on the discussion about sacred herbs last time. And so go ahead, Jimmy James.
Yes, I did get my order, Christine. Very quickly, very quick shipping, A+. And, well, so far so good. I mean, I only got it since Saturday, but I feel like I can breathe better.
Wow, awesome.
So just like that, it helped you out already. That's great to hear.
And that was so simple. Excellent. Yeah.
Awesome.
Herbs, medicine. Yeah. It's amazing how little we really have to do to make improvements. And I think that's why people don't really believe it. And there is a lot of snake oil out there and, you know, people making claims on things that just aren't true. But yeah, I definitely take pride in my work. Every single leaf, everything is a process and given with thanks. And yeah, so I'm glad that you've been able to experience some relief already.
Is that helping you?
Well,
I wanted to ask you, Jimmy James, really quickly, the fact that you can breathe better, is that helping you out like to feel better emotionally or mentally too? Because usually if you can just help out your breathing, quite honestly, it does have other effects. So are you noticing any of that already? Like maybe you just generally are not in as bad a mood, or maybe you're feeling a little more rested when you sleep at night or anything like that, if you're able to breathe better. Anything like that going on?
Well, I've been getting actual sleep. So yes, that's for sure so far something.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been getting good deep sleep, which is nice.
There you go.
If I remember correctly, I think I sent you a Pain Be Gone sample.
Yes, I'm still... so far, I still haven't got off the sacred ceremonial herbs.
Oh, you see, you haven't even tried the mint or the pain be gone. That's awesome. Excellent. Yeah, well, if you do... Sorry.
I already smoke a lot of, legal pot. It's legal here. So I've been mixing that with it, and I don't know, it helps a lot.
There you go.
Excellent. Yeah. I don't know if you read the reviews on there, but they're all like, it's so funny because they all basically say the same thing, but a little bit different. I smoke weed all day, every day, and I've had this hacking cough, and then one puff from here, and the cough is gone, and yeah, it's...
I would say the opposite. See, I sometimes cough, but I never had productive coughs.
Well, see, that's
gross, but...
Yeah, no, that's a different thing, though. See, if you have a healthy... Look, coughing is a good thing, right?
Right.
But if it becomes a chronic deal where you're just coughing all the time, well, there's your problem, and that also reduces your ability to breathe cleanly. So it cuts down on your oxygen and everything else if you have a chronic cough. If you cough at the appropriate time, right, and as you said, it's productive, then it's productive. It's a natural reaction, which right. should be.
And it is... Yeah, so when, like Chuck said, when you cough, the whole purpose is to get rid of something, right? And so those are natural expectorants. So if there's something that needs to come out, it should hopefully help with that.
There you go. So that's why it's helpful. And then again, you know, you're using the cannabis to get, you know, a certain effect as well. And like I said, when I started to feel better, I mean, I started using less. I still have some tincture, and occasionally I'll use like a drop here or there. But I mean, I don't need to use it that often. You know, but that's the thing, is if you improve the chronic situation, sometimes you'll notice you don't necessarily need what it is you were using before to try and cope with it. In some cases you need to augment that, and some, but everybody's different, you see. So right. That's the thing. Like I would not say that, you know, I know some of the other issues that you have, Jimmy, just, you know, interacting with you. And I would say that, the cannabis is probably helping you with some of those things, but maybe not everything. So perhaps you found a new path where it's, you have a more helpful set of, things that you're introducing into your body that are, again, no objection to cannabis here, but cannabis alone may not be the only thing that is helpful to you. And why not, if you can get it from nature, right? Feel better, get things working better, get breathing better. And apparently you found a combination here. So I would say stick with it and keep tweaking it too.
Right. Breathing's kind of important, right? Because without that, mm-hmm. then it causes all sorts of dysfunction, including... all of the topics we've discussed so far, Chuck, that which we haven't really gotten deep into depression and anxiety, but that, the headaches, the pain, whatever we talked about the week before, I mean, it's at the root, right? You need oxygen in your cells, and the stress and tension that causes, that, of course... You know, it's snowball effect with a bunch of other symptoms. So, well, yeah,
and
definitely.
Just, another thing that you didn't necessarily mention is fatigue. Like, it's very important that he's getting better sleep now.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You know, because if you're fatigued to begin with, and then something, you know, look, bad things are going to happen, okay? And how you handle them is yet another story. If you're already tired, you're already aching, you're already suffering from a lack of oxygen, and a bad thing comes along, well, you might take it harder. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's a good thing to get yourself in balance when things are not going badly. You know, I mean, if they are, of course, address it. But what I'm saying is that if you get yourself in balance ahead of the bad situation coming up, you'll be able to deal with it better, whether you know it or not. You know,
absolutely. Thing called orthomolecular psychology, and the entire principle and healing is based on getting your minerals and nutrition imbalance, right?
Right.
So that would include enough water, and then obviously the basic sleeps and things. So,
which can range all the way from a mild depression to actually treating somebody who has a serious a drug addiction issue. I had Leslie Carroll both on this show years ago talking about that. That a lot of drug addiction issues are much lessened by the better application of nutrition. And even though she was trying to apply that in rehab facilities that she was working in, a lot of that industry rejects it and was resistant to her doing so. But it was provable, and it was applicable all the way around. You know, one thing is, no matter how you view somebody who's addicted to a substance of any kind, even if you go to the most extreme and you start talking about junkies, one of the common elements here is that they usually are not the most nutritionally sound individuals when it comes to what they're putting in their bodies.
Right.
And you discover that the rehab might be easier, better, or even not even necessarily necessary if you can put that back in balance. And that's what Botha got herself, you know, constantly fired from these facilities for. But but she was applying that, and it was all about nutrition, which, again,
absolutely,
you know, it takes care of a lot of these things that we consider to be psychological or psychosocial problems. So, Jimmy, do you have something else you want to add, or should we put you on hold and go through the depression topic and see if anybody else calls in?
Oh, I just had a quick comment that's interesting because it goes with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sad to say, but Johnny Cash, in his last, I just seen, I don't know, a show like a year ago. You ever see that show, Their Last Day?
I can't
about
say
the last day of a celebrity's.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen that in particular, but I know a little about Johnny Cash. Go ahead.
Well, I seen an episode of that, and it's sad because this guy that came along and did Johnny Cash's life, he was in the medicine, a nutrition expert and stuff, and he actually was turning everything around for Johnny Cash to where he was getting better.
Right.
He started feeling better, but then he died. But before that, he was actually getting to where he could move around and stuff again. And this guy said he thought it was mostly nutrition issues with that guy.
Yeah, no, that's a true story. I never saw the TV show, but I do know that is the case. It's just that a lot of damage had been done to Johnny over the years, self-inflicted. And I think that's why he didn't make it. Plus, I urge you that the factor is clear that he wanted to join June. Maybe he wasn't trying to kill himself, but I'll tell you, you will yourself to certain things like that. But Johnny was getting better. You're right. He had more mobility. He was able to move around and stuff like that, which was noticeable when he changed a lot of his nutritional habits. Again, not because he was an idiot or anything. You don't necessarily get trained in this. This is not something they do. You know, you go to see a doctor, they don't often pull out the nutritionist, and they should. And a properly trained one would be nice.
That nutritionist looked at all of his bottles of medicine and said, well, this is insane.
Exactly.
They're giving you Oxycontin because you have hiccups?
Yeah. Yeah. For a guy who had, serious problems with substances, it was kind of... But they would just give him... Again, these celebrities, in a lot of cases, give them whatever they want. And, But Johnny was starting to feel better. He was laying off of some of the medications and everything. Not all of them, you know. No, listen, if you got a chest full of medicine, nobody in their right mind is going to tell you throw it all away today. It would be nice, but the problem is that these things, sudden stoppages in them, can cause problems. So I would never tell anybody that. You got to incrementally deal with these kind of things. And Johnny Cash was, but again, I think he was kind of brokenhearted once June died, you know? So, I mean,
I'm sure he lost his will to live there, but...
Partially, partially, for sure. And look, you can't, no matter how you try and explain things to somebody, by the way, again, your will, your own personal will quite often dictate a lot of outcomes. And I really feel like Johnny Cash was half-heartedly going through the motions toward the end, even though he could better go through the motions because his nutritional situation was being addressed. But I haven't seen this TV show that would probably illustrate that real well. So good points there, though, Jimmy James. Very good. But with that, I'm going to put you on hold. And what we'll do is turn the rest of this hour over to Christy. And we're going to have to, I mean, we've already laid the table here. Out, right? We've set the table, laid the table. Why am I laying the table? We set the table for the good food for thought here regarding depression. Because, again, you know, when you're sad, it's not depression. Okay? Sadness, right, again, is also a natural thing that happens. We shouldn't be afraid of sadness for good reason. You know, you can be sad when your pet dies. You can be sad when a loved one leaves one way or another. You could be sad because life is changing around you and, you know, you may not feel empowered temporarily. But you got to avoid allowing that to graduate into a depressive state, which, again, can in and of itself weigh on you, even if you are eating the right things. You know, you're avoiding the right things, etc. So I think it all begins with a mindset when it comes to depression. Now, does that mean that there's always easy solutions? Well, no, there's no such thing as a one-size-fits-all. So where do we begin with that topic, Christy, which, again, we'll probably have to continue next week because we're not tackling depression in a half hour, I assure you. And even if I let Christy go as long as she wants, we ain't tackling it tonight. So, you know, we'll begin. How about that?
Right.
How about that?
in reference to what you said, regarding sadness versus depression, deep depression is just, it's a reflection of repressed emotion. So do we have deep pressed emotions, say sadness, grief, things that we failed to, you know, we weren't given an opportunity to express or heal from or grieve properly? Are we in need of a deep rest? I mean, today's society, we're literally taught that emotions are mental illness, and this whole idea in regards to mental illness was because they claimed a chemical imbalance. But the truth is, there has never been a chemical imbalance proven until after the drugs to treat these symptoms have been introduced. And without spending too much time on that, I would just like to encourage you to go check out Dr. Peter Breggin. He has been in the psychiatry industry, I guess it must be about 60 years now, because he used to be a regular on my show like a decade and more ago. But, okay, so our society teaches us, you know, man or woman, right? We have different things, but men aren't supposed to cry. And, you know, women, if we cry, we're emotional, we're crazy. We're taught children aren't allowed to be children and not be okay with sitting in a classroom for 8 hours being forced to somebody they know who's lying to them or that they're smarter than, right? It's not a disease that you want to go out and play, you know, when you're a child. It's not a disease when you're, you know, dis-ease. What are you not at ease with? Yes, we are a dis-eased society, but it's not an actual provable, diagnosable by their litmus tests, an actual disease or illness, right? And and what's an illness? Are we feeling ill? So yes, it is just like the other topics we've discussed, headaches and no, I can't even remember.
Well, but let me ask you this though, because this is a tough subject, and I'll tell you why. I kind of object to part of what you said, and I want to talk to you about it.
Right, but I'm not done.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, wait, yeah. Let me try to finish my thought and then object all you want.
Sure.
So we are living in a society that is mentally ill, mm-hmm. right? And we are taught to live unnatural lives. And if we're nature and we're part of nature, we kind of need that, right? Just like all the other topics, the main causes... not enough water, not enough sunshine, not enough rest, not enough self-care, not allowed to express emotions without somebody trying to lock you up, right? So what I'm suggesting here is that if we take a different approach to these symptoms, because that's what they are, when we feel depressed or anxious or have a panic attack or anxiety attack, those are symptoms. They're not the cause. So in my practice, I help my clients. We get to the root cause. And the root cause is always trauma and the not being given the space to express, to feel, be told it's okay. Now, let me tell you, the worst thing anyone can do when you're depressed, your friends or family want to call cops on you and have you hogtied, and then you get freaking forcefully injected and, you know, that is the opposite of what we need to be doing. We don't need to be giving out brain disabling drugs like candy. That clearly is not the solution. Otherwise, we would be much healthier today than we were when these things were introduced, okay? Like, we supposedly advanced because we're not using ice picks to perform lobotomies today or bloodletting, but what's the difference when we're poisoning our insides and causing a lack of connection from who and what we really are? So I'm not saying that depression and anxiety are not real. They're very real. I lived them. I was begging for death. I spent months in bed. I had panic attacks. I took, I don't even know how many pills, okay? All of them. So I know both sides, and thankfully I was able to get away from that and then see the patterns. Whether generational or not, most often, you know, there's something happened in our childhood that led to trauma. And if you're one of those people saying, oh no, I had the perfect family, okay, maybe you did, but let me tell you something else we don't talk about. The flight or fight response, you know, we hear about that all the time, but we don't hear of the other F word, which is freeze. Right. So let me tell you, we are unconsciously causing our cells trauma that they hold on to even when we're doing things that we agree with. For example, going in for knee surgery, say, or anything like that, right? So there are causes to depression and anxiety and trauma, even if, you know, just because you weren't in a foxhole in Afghanistan or Vietnam doesn't mean there isn't some type of trauma at the root. And when your cells are paralyzed and your heart and your brain and neurotransmitters are like, what the heck's going on here? Wait, I don't think we discussed this. I'm not sure I agreed with this. I mean, you know? So there's that aspect that nobody's talking about, right? And then, you know, we always hear about the sympathetic nerve system, but we never talk about the parasympathetic nerve system, which is picking up things around us. So sometimes the root isn't even actually within us, whether you're like a super empath or what. And if you are, don't let that be an excuse for lack of self-care. Okay, so at the root of healing it is self-love, but in a real way, not like go get your nails done and do this. Yeah, draw yourself a bath, whatever. But real self-love is when you're treating your body like the temple it is, okay? And you're true to yourself and your body. Instead of working that extra 8 hours, you know, and staying up till 6 a.m. again and getting back up at 8 to go on with your day, you're honoring yourself, your body, your temple, you're getting the rest, you're giving yourself the nourishment, the proper fuels, all of those basic things that we talked about in all the previous shows that are relevant with every dis-ease, including mental illness. So that's, I guess, an introduction to where I'm coming from when in the depression anxiety topic.
Fair enough. The reason why I have objection is that I agree with, like, say 90% of what you just said. Right? Not only do I agree, I know that it's factual. The issue I have, though, is that in some cases there are such things as chemical imbalances. It's just that I don't think we necessarily recognize what that actually means or where it came from. That cause behaviors that, you know, the person, if not chemically imbalanced, would not voluntarily participate in. Becomes, and the other thing, which, and there, I just think that that's true. Here's something I know is true.
No, you're right, though, and I just want to say, before you move on,
sure.
There are actual chemical imbalances, yes, but none in relation to prove that mental illness, according to their terms, exists.
Mm. Okay,
so there's definitely fair. Imbalances all over the place, so that's what we need to be addressing, right?
Right, and there is also such a thing as not only, you know, because people might say, okay, you're talking about trauma. Trauma may be in a lot of different forms, and one of them, which I think is indisputable, is that if you damage the brain, you have a different, the organ behaves differently. I mean,
dude, being circumcised, okay, after your first breath causes trauma that nobody talks about unless I'm on my old show.
No, and I understand.
Or like having your wisdom teeth pulled, being put under, you know, so people aren't talking about that, you know?
Right.
And these are real causes that, like I said, even if you have the perfect family, but, you know, there's not some whatever tragic abuse or underground base, you know, those kinds of things, there's still that has to be looked at, right? There's no one size fits all.
And the other thing is that, you know, okay, so some people would argue when you especially bring up something like circumcision or being put under and this kind of thing, look, you have no memory of it. How can you be traumatized by it? Yeah, there's a problem there. Simply because you don't have recall memory doesn't mean that you're not aware, okay?
Dude, the person who supposedly loves you the most just hands you off to a stranger to cut your most sensitive organ. How are you going to trust that person or any person that resembles that person the rest of your life?
Well,
never mind. We don't even need to get into that topic medically or religiously or anything. I'm just saying,
that's
a hidden trauma. And I've dealt with men, I don't mean in a sexual or personal relationship, but in my what I do, helping people, and they, you know, they were in their so-called midlife and finally realizing the contributing factors to that original trauma that, you know, they never thought about until they did. And
well, and traumas begin before that because, frankly, again, you know, your recall memory, it doesn't actually begin even in the earliest stages of life until you're, you know, walking around, basically.
You know, your cells, your subconscious, remember.
Yeah, well, it's at 18 months, but there's a neurophysical idea here where you have a memory which is not necessarily connected to recall that is there almost from inception, which there you go. You get a sense of the world before you even leave mother's womb from this form of memory, which, by the way, contributes to the idea, possibly for the rest of your life, as to how you see the world outside. Is it a hostile place?
So there's even that pre-birth experience as well.
So I'm just saying that there is a neurophysical idea there. And when you do damage to the brain, as I've had to learn the hard way, this does change the behavior of that organ, which does influence, guess what? All of those things, hormones, you know, the neurochemical matrix, which influences the rest of the body. All of those systems can be influenced. If you have a damage to a certain area of the brain that's supposed to be doing a certain job, yes, it will heal itself after some time, but you got a lot of a convalescence time there that you may be not functioning properly. And not necessarily realize it,
and
because
all the systems work together.
Yes.
So whether you're dealing with, say, depression or heart failure or whatever, you have to. Yeah, it all boils down to basically the same.
Well, I'll tell you a weird thing,
Chuck. I love what you're saying because.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love when you.
Well, it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing to consider, though, because even if, and this is going to sound a little crazy, but I bet you can explain it, is that even if your kidneys are not functioning properly, whether you're in renal failure or not, okay, if they're not functioning properly, guess what? That can also promote depression.
Absolutely. And here's where it gets crazier, which came first, the chicken or the egg. As we mentioned in the last couple shows, how emotions correlate to organs in your body.
Right.
Is it, and kidneys related to fear, is it fear that caused the kidney issue, or did the kidney issue help promote
fear?
The fear, yeah. Right? That, again, the depression, anxiety, which is all a result of that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to bring that out, is that at all times you must consider the whole. See, if we were thinking about this scientifically and objectively outside of ourselves, we would say, what is the whole of the system that is operating here? And that is the difference between allopathic medicine and naturopathy, or whatever it is you want to call it, holistic, is that, you know, you address a symptom with allopathic medicine. Indeed, you do address the symptom. Maybe if you're given the right opiate, the pain goes away. It didn't fix the damage, you see.
Right.
So, and in matter of fact, what it might do, especially because they give you all kinds of little promoters and activators and things like that in the medicines, alleged medicines, guess what you get? Other results that now are counterproductive.
Even when the pain is being relieved or the inflammation or whatever, guess what? The problem is still there, but you're masking it. So, like the last time when I was on, what's that called? Meloxicam, one of those. What do they call it? I forget the MAOI or no? What's it called?
It's some kind of blocker, right? It's a.
So it's a anti-inflammatory,
but it blocks your receptor in the brain.
It worked. Like had a good night's sleep. I woke up. I could walk. I could literally stand upright. Get up and walk. And before I knew it, I'm walking 11 miles, 13 miles, and oh my God, I'm gonna walk around the country. This is so amazing, And but. The problem didn't go away. It was still there. So I was causing further damage, not just with the side effects of the drug, but the fact that the original issue wasn't being addressed, which caused all sorts of things. And honestly, that medication, and I know two other people that it helped for issues initially, but within 2 or 3 months, we were all suicidal.
Right.
So, and I mean in a big way, suicidal, Like one of my friends ended up in it, like threw everything away, checked into a hotel, and then woke up in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is it doing to the soul, to the parasympathetic nerve system, to the part in you that's crying out, listen to me, love me, let's deal with this, right? And if your trauma is related to something like that, abandonment or abuse or whatever, why are we carrying it on by abusing ourselves, right? So that's where we have to, you know, hopefully take small steps forward in giving ourselves the love that we needed. Right? Why would we carry on the abuse of whatever caused whatever trauma that led to the depression in the first place? And I want to say this about anxiety. Anxiety is just your body telling you you're not listening to yourself. Mm-hmm. Your parasympathetic nervous system is off the hook. And like, I can give you, here's one example I'm thinking of right away. This one chick was, you know, kind of psychic, but people, you know, usually if you're psychic and you tell too many people, you end up being delusional or mentally ill. So she went to a meeting about a topic she wanted to hear about, but she kept having negative kind of flashbacks type situation, and then started shaking and getting all anxious, and she was suppressing herself because she felt that she had to be in the classroom, when inside she really knew that she had to run and get away from that person, which things came out later that proved her body, her intuition, right, her higher self, her parasympathetic nerve system, her subconscious, it proved that right. But the reason she had that anxiety attack is because she didn't listen to that and stayed in that situation and tried to just ride it out, right? Mm-hmm. So part of self-care and self-love in dealing with these things is we have to learn to say no. We have to be okay with walking out of something, at whatever it is, whenever it is, or walking away from someone, whoever they are, no matter what, family, friend, oh, but all my other friends that, you know? So that's our soul screaming at us, listen to me, hold me, you know? Let's work this out. And more, really, when we are 100% truly authentic with ourselves, you will never suffer from those things again. I'm telling you that because when you can truly take care of yourself and take that rest when you need it, and even if you have to stay in bed for 2 months, it's okay, all right? Like, understand that it's necessary. Like, these symptoms are here because we're not listening to our body. We're trying to keep up with the job we hate, mm-hmm. or the responsibilities that we resent, or whatever, right? But to be completely free of that, and it's not easy because people get mad at you when you're no longer their pincushion or there to let them dump all of their stuff on you. And well, I get it, you want to help yeah, other people, but
let me interrupt you there because this is a key point, okay? Sometimes I know this from watching it as a third party. And I know this from having this happen to me, that it is sometimes difficult to recognize when somebody is, and I know this is going to sound really, really trite, but some people are just vampiric. They just are. And what right. they'll do is take advantage of you yes. or just kind of, and I don't even think they all consciously do it. But it's not about their motive. What happens, though, is that sometimes you think you're helping somebody and all you are in a direct sense and your intentions are good, but sometimes you surround yourself with people that really do drain you. And again, when you become tired, it's very easy to get angry. It's very easy to flip into rage yeah. when you're tired enough. And really, depression, to me, I always found this profound, although it sounds really self-helpy and goofy, is that depression is effectively rage turned inward. So somewhere in your system, you're recognizing that, you know, cost-benefit here, you're being drained. And you become kind of angry at yourself. So this is another thing. You know, there's thousands of toxins all around us, but some of them walk around on 2 feet, Christy.
And, absolutely. You are so right. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up because that's when I was referring to that not all of these issues are even yours, except for the fact that once you recognize the vampire, you got to go. But, you know, here's the thing. Ticks don't differentiate on whose blood they suck. Right. You know, you said you don't know if it's a conscious thing or not, but ticks have to eat. They have to suck blood. So do vampires, period. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to choose to stay in that situation, then you just have to, you know, cost-benefit analysis, like you said. You know what I'm saying? But if you want to not be depressed and tired and anxious and have your soul screaming at you, and here's a, I'm just going to put it simply, like, when you're not doing what your intuition tells you to do, if your body's flaring up or acting out like that and you're still putting yourself in that situation, you're literally telling God / your higher self / nature / whatever you think created or designed you, you're telling them to screw off. I'm smarter than you. I don't need that warning signal. And then what happens to your intuition, right? The less you listen to it, then, you know, the harder it is to decipher. And then, as you said, the blame, the self-blame, then we doubt ourselves further. And then it's just a terrible spiral. So we need to get to a point where we are okay being ourselves, where we're not comparing ourselves to anyone or anything, but maybe accept who we were yesterday, right? And if something isn't feeling good, no matter what it is, fix it. And I know people say, oh, well, I just don't have the money to move or this or that. I don't want to remind you, but I chose homelessness over being on a toxic person or psychopath couch or fake bed and breakfast or the Google SpaceX people or all of those things, right? Because I knew at that point my health, my mental health, if I couldn't fix that, I would never heal my body. All right. So I made that my mission. And it was so clear as day that when I went out to the forest and I could breathe and I could walk upright and I could form words, and then I'd like go back to the city in the company of, say, one of these people, and then I'm limped over, you know, or hunched over, limping again in terrible pain. So there is a correlation between energies, and the more you listen to yourself, the more you're going to get. Right. But if you keep telling yourself, your intuition, your higher self to, you know, screw off, right, then what do you expect, right? So
hilarious thing really, about this. Hilarious thing about this is that you're almost word for word telling me something that somebody was trying to tell me privately a few days ago.
That's great.
And it's so funny because even if you think you have a handle on all this every once in a while, it's also good to bounce it off of somebody you can trust. And I'm not one of these people going to therapy. I'm not that guy. Okay. What I'm saying is that you need to have somebody around as an advisor in one way or another, because they may be able to observe something that you do not. With that, Christy, I'm going to let you close this out, because you know what? I'm at the end of my showtime almost. And, here we are. But a great introduction, I think, into the concept of depression. Finally, we got there, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying we're going with this groove the way it goes, and we're going to have to continue the topic next week for sure. Jimmy James is still hanging on the line, but don't feel any pressures, Christy. However it is you want to close out the discussion this week, I remind people mytrueessence.net is a place to go and look at different resources which are available to you, as well as going to ChristyAphrodite.com. Christy gave some links in the chat room during the discussion. I'll include all that with the show notes. Again, we'll do this next Tuesday, right?
Absolutely. Even if I forget, I'll be here.
There you go.
So I do want to bring up, there was a cool comment in the chat that said, ha ha ha, living is suicide. And dude, that is so true. And that's one of the reasons I recommend, again, follow your heart. Find the place you want to die, the people you want to die with. Do what you love. Live every moment with purpose, like you're actually here to live your purpose and your heart's desire, right? So there's a difference in living a life that society wants you to, or the life that makes your heart sing. So whatever that is for you, find what that is, and I promise things like mental illness and disease is a thing of the past. And we hear often about social responsibility. I'd like to add this in relation to what you mentioned earlier. And to me, social responsibility requires that we're there for our friends, right? So people on Facebook will post some image or some copy and paste thing saying, oh, National Suicide Awareness, you know, if you're feeling depressed, call this number, you know, some 800 number. And I'm like, no, call me. Like, I would never, like, don't do that, because nothing, again, getting hogtied and your door beat down by cops and being locked up is not a way to heal. Be the friend that you needed when you were going through it, right? Like, that's, we don't need to pay therapists, you know, like you said, Chuck. We need real, trusted friends. And if you don't have that, walk away to make room for those people, right? That's what community is, and community building. So yeah, I'm totally with you on the therapy thing. Just a paid fake friend that really doesn't even care. Right. So make real friends. Make yourself a priority.
Right, and I've even offered on this show during certain times of the year, especially, quite frankly, that, you know, if you're a regular listener of mine, you hear what I'm saying, and you need somebody to talk to and you don't think you have anybody, that I will take the time to talk to you. Just reach out to me.
Yes, and I've done that. I won't call cops. I ain't going to judge you.
No.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what to do or what not to do.
Or
somebody in your life that's like that, call them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because honestly, most of the time we just want to be heard. We just want to know that somebody understands, right? And that it's okay. Like sometimes, just, I'll tell you what, man, in my homeless days, just a smile, like a real smile, or a how are you, with from somebody who meant it, that actually wanted to stand there and hear the answer. You know what I mean?
Right.
That was all it took to not commit suicide that day.
And that's the thing that I've tried to explain too.
Cost no dollars.
A random act of kindness, if you have the resources to give that out, right? You don't know what you may be doing. You may put a stop to the terrible thing that might come up next, because nobody listened to that person that day. Nobody talked to him. Nobody acknowledged him. And that's all it takes. It doesn't cost you a thing to do that if you're in that position. And again, I would urge people to listen to exactly what Christy just said. And we're going to close this out, but we're going to continue the conversation as the weeks go on. And really, I feel good about doing this, and I make that offer, by the way. If you are a listener of my show, you feel like nobody will listen to you, You know, by all means, reach out to me however it is you can see a way to reach out, and I will make time to talk to you, to listen to you more than probably talk to you. But either way, if that's where you're at, then I'm here, if nobody else is. But you should find somebody that you can put in that space. And if you don't have them, like you said, make room for them. Christy Aphrodite, once again, ChristyAphrodite.com, but also MyTrueEssence.net. There are many a resource there, and there will be many notes in the show notes. So thanks, Christy.
Thank you.
I am Merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Be well.